This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I am Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. South Africa's payments ecosystem is evolving at a rapid pace. PayInc, formerly known as BankServe Africa, sits at the core of the country's payments infrastructure. As the builder and manager of the PayShap instant payment rails, PayInc is central to the Reserve Bank's plans to drive digital inclusion through payments modernization. My guest in studio today is Stephen Linnell. He is the CEO of PayInc, who will give us perspective on the changes happening in the financial landscape, as well as the future of payments. Stephen, welcome to the show and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Nati. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Stephen, just to kick off, could we learn more about you? You're a lifelong banker. You started off at Barclays.
Yes, I did spend quite a bit of time in Barclays and then more recently at Rand Merchant Bank. My background was predominantly in technology. So I was CIO, COO in that context. And then before that, I was actually in consulting. So I worked for a consulting house called Accenture.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And you've been at BankServe now since?
It's almost 2 years.
Okay.
Yes, 2 years to the day.
And 2 years is about as long as PayShap has been running, hey?
Yes. They rang the bell just before I joined.
Yes.
And so now we're in full execution.
But before we get to the details of PayShap, yes. PayInc, BankServe Africa, yes, has become PayInc. And the rebrand comes with a strategic shift. Could you give us some color into what that means?
Of course. Maybe just to share a little bit about PayInc itself and then the transition. So we're a purposeful payments provider that connects economies, people and businesses to digital payments. So our role very much is in providing and facilitating payments, electronic payments in the country. We've been around for 5 decades now. We've had various names in that legacy. But as you note, we've recently relaunched as PayInc. And that's not to lose the track record that we've had as BankServe Africa, but really we felt where South Africa is at the moment and where we are as a country, we felt that it was important to more closely marry what our brand represents to our strategy. And I mentioned we're a purposeful payments provider, and I think that's really where the name shines through. The intent of the company very much is to generate financial inclusion and economic growth through digital payments, and Pay describes what we do and Inc. describes why we do it. It's around inclusivity.
Okay, excellent. There are lots of changes happening at PayInc, yes, including that now the Reserve Bank is coming in as a participant and they will have 50% shareholding. Mm-hmm. Could you give us more details around the ownership structure as well as why or the benefits of this?
Yeah, sure. So at the moment, we are largely led by 4 shareholders, four large banks, and then a small minority cluster of smaller banks. And over the last couple of years, we've considered 2 things. The first is that we felt, in the context of us wanting to be more inclusive and have greater access into the market, we wanted to effectively mutualize the company with a broader suite of key financial services players in the country. So we have been open to bringing more shareholders into the business for quite some time now. And at the same time, the South African Reserve Bank, in observing a lot of what has been going on abroad, particularly in the BRICS community, where payments really has been used as a catalyst for driving economic growth in a country. And in those countries, the central banks, in acknowledging that their payments are that important, have taken a more formative and active role in payments intermediation and provision. Mm-hmm. And so at the time we were considering broader shareholders, central bank approached us with their intent to effectively create a national payments utility for the country. And so with the current shareholders and the Central Reserve Bank, we concluded on a deal at the end of last year whereby, as you mentioned, the SARB will subscribe for 50% of PayInc's shares. We will also bring in a number of new shareholders. We'll be bringing in Capitec Bank as a direct shareholder, as well as Investec, African Bank, Access Bank, and Citibank. So we will be expanding our shareholder base more broadly. But as you noted, the central bank is taking a much more active role and will be the sort of the controlling shareholder of this when the Competition Commission approves.
Okay. And what, how does this relate to PayInc's role as a settlements, payments and settlements provider that competes with others such as Visa and MasterCard?
Yeah, so we have three main parts of our business. We have the electronic payments part of our business, which includes EFTs, PayShap, as you've mentioned. It includes our card business, where we process for on behalf of the local banks, whether they are part of a Visa or a MasterCard scheme. And then also the cash side of our business, which looks at how do we facilitate more effective movement of physical cash in the economy. And that's perhaps our smaller part of the business. The electronic side is much more prominent as we try and move the economy from cash into digital payments. And so we do already participate in the card infrastructure today as an operator. And in some cases, we do compete with Visa and MasterCard. But for the sort of the broad intent is to ensure that there is wide competition for the payment rails in South Africa. And so you know, we very much encourage Visa and MasterCard's role that they play in South Africa. We've supported China UnionPay coming into the country and starting to offer a footprint in card as well. And so the central bank's investment into South Africa doesn't necessarily change that. The central bank also wants a rich and competitive marketplace for payment services because normally it drives down costs, it brings in innovation. And so that's something we would support. It also doesn't change how we are regulated necessarily. So in the current regime, we are regulated as a what's called a payment clearinghouse system operator, and we are licensed through PASA, which is the payment system management body, which is effectively a self-regulating authority that has been given licensing mandate from the central bank. And those licenses won't change because of the pending investment by the central bank. But they may change in the near future because the central bank is actually in the process of embarking on quite a large-scale change in the regulatory landscape for the payments infrastructure in South Africa. And so these two things are dovetailing at very much the same time.
Yes. Let's get into that. The Reserve Bank is looking to introduce new players into the payments landscape, including non-bank players.
Yes.
What is the benefit for the payments ecosystem?
I think that is really the crux of what we're trying to do in our role is bring new participants into the market. And the central bank is doing that as well. And why it's beneficial is if you look at the complexity of your traditional payments value chain and you look at the different customer segments which payments take place in, whether you've got B2B, so businesses to businesses, or P2M, so it's me buying a banana on the side of the road, or e-commerce type transactions, you actually need a huge diversity of businesses and operators to try and successfully penetrate all facets of that market. And so the bringing in of non-bank providers into clearing and settlement is a goal of the central bank because it just allows a much more ingrained and focused approach into the market. And so we are looking forward to that change. For us, it will mean we get to directly bring on customers that are not simply the banks because we only deal with regulated participants, and as non-banks get regulated under the new regime, then we can support other third parties to grow the payments landscape.
And I mean, concrete examples of this are, for example, that a telecoms services provider that has a wallet facility
Absolutely.
Or a retailer yes. can now play in the clearance and settlement space.
Yes.
That helps, I mean, these fintechs, they have a wider reach.
Hmm.
So this is about what, reaching sectors of the economy that are not necessarily banked?
Yes, I guess there's two elements to it. And I noted you mentioned the sector sponsored by MTN. So, I mean, yes. the Momo wallet is a huge, what we call in the industry, a closed-loop wallet. So it's not interoperable with other stores of value in South Africa. You can't easily use it at a shopping center. And so what our goal would be in tandem with the regulatory changes, how do we bring those closed-loop wallets into the traditional and regulated payments ecosystem so that people who have those wallets can use them in far more places than they do today, and that you have additional security and protection mechanisms over that store of value. So on the one angle, it is very much just bringing in wallets that are traditionally kept outside of the traditional payments ecosystem. And then, as you pointed out, the second area is as you bring in new participants, they can target different sectors of the economy that are perhaps not, they're just not rich enough for the traditional players to play into.
And this infrastructure that the hope is that the infrastructure that will underpin all of this are the instant payment rails in PayShap.
Yes.
Because the faster money moves through the economy, then the more vibrant and lively the economy is. As you said, it's been 2 years of PayShap.
Yes.
Looking at the last 2 years, what are the successes and where to next?
I think the greatest success really is that in acknowledging that bringing a new payments rail into the economy requires a huge number of participants to collaborate to get this over the line. And so the run-up to the launch of PayShap, I think, was the first successful market for the industry. It required the regulator, all of the large banks in South Africa to get together and agree on how this infrastructure will be deployed.
Yeah.
And that was very successfully done. I think as you look into the subsequent 2 years, one has to accept that payments rails require trust. Trust requires people to have knowledge of its features and benefits and to gain acceptance over time. So trust does build, and it's not instant. We want the payments to be instant, but the trust does take some time to get there. And so that has been what has matured over the last 2 years. People are getting more and more used to using PayShap. But there's a number of elements that we are not yet happy with and we're pushing for. And I guess the first is the acceptance mechanisms for PayShap. So at the moment, it's an interoperable payments rail that allows me, if I'm banking with one bank, to pay to you instantly if you're at another bank. But as you've noted, if you were keeping your savings in a wallet that's outside of the ecosystem, it can't go there. And when you go into a shopping center or using a taxi, there's no easy way for you to make that payment because the initial release of PayShap was intended to deal with what we call as P2P, so person-to-person type transactions.
Yes.
I send money to you. But it's less equipped in the current form for merchant transactions. And people don't use payment rails unless they can use that money somewhere.
Yes.
And so the next enhancement that we're hoping to go live with early in the course of next year is the QR payments.
Yes.
So that you can scan to pay, or a merchant can present a QR code that
yes.
you can pay. And so that just increases the ease at which people can then transact. And the third area where we've had to improve upon and recently went live with it to the back end of last year was something called PayShap Request. And this is a feature that allows a merchant or a person to request payments from you. So they initiate a payment, which you then make payments to. And so we've had to mature those features over time as people get more comfortable with the system. And there's many more to come. So it's maturing fast. Our growth rate is sort of in tens of percents every month. Yeah. We're now processing over 45 million transactions per month.
Yes.
But it's not nearly where we want to get it to. So we hope over the next 2 years there's going to be an accelerated adoption.
And I think, as you say, different use cases just make it accelerate adoption that much quicker.
Yes.
When I began using PayShop, I would have to tell the person to go into their banking app
and
register for this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. Now I say, okay, I'll make a request to your phone, just accept. And,
spot on.
You know, and then once they've used it once, there's this element of, oh, okay, wait, what just happened?
Yes.
I got the money instantly.
It was easy.
And they get into it.
Yes.
The QR code payment use case is very interesting because in places like China, you could go to a market and buy a cabbage and you just quickly scan. And you're off. So I imagine in South Africa, as you said, in the taxi industry, for example, imagine paying with a QR code just like that.
Yes.
And you know, that does make it easier. Is there a greater need for marketing, do you think, as well, or on the educational side?
Yes, I think so. If we look at places like India and Brazil, where they've had huge successes in their instant payment capability, it was seen as a national imperative, as we do here. And so the government and the central banks got very active themselves in terms of promoting and educating. That's something we know that the central bank is looking to do and will support us on. It's something that we've tried to do as the provider of the service, but in the end, most of our exposure is through intermediaries. In the moment, it's the banks. And so they've also been increasing their marketing around this. But it has been slower than we would have hoped. So it is something we will uplift. And it's a combination not just of marketing, but really of education, because in part you're educating people away from the use of or the dependence on cash. And I think if we look at South Africa, a lot of people do use sort of the physical notes as a way of budgeting. I can see it, therefore I know there's no interest being charged. And so that is something we have to assist the economy with.
Okay. So it's one thing getting the domestic part right. If you get money moving faster in the economy becomes more buoyant and vibrant, and you are making efforts to do this now at a regional level.
Yes, correct.
How much harder does the problem become?
Oh, it's it's infinitely harder.
Yes.
I think if you consider payments, really start with the regulatory regime under which they are regulated under, and then there's the technology, and then there's the market adoption that we've spoken about. As soon as you go beyond a single border, you've got two or more regulatory regimes to deal with, and so you effectively need bilateral agreements between two different countries, or in our case we're targeting the SADC community.
Yes.
So there's multiple countries you have to get conformity and alignment as to how payments will flow cross-border. The technology is actually very simple. And the marketing, again, is harder because you've got a broader reach to achieve. So I think we've found and we have a capability that services SADC called TCIB, Transactions Cleared on an Immediate Basis. Challenging name.
Yes.
really the intent for us would be when South Africans are used to and are able to make PayShap payments domestically, that they will then be able to do a cross-border anywhere in South Africa. So it will service, in Southern Africa. So it will service the remittance market. Mm. Hopefully it will enable greater trade as we move up the sort of the size scale. But it is a slow process because it requires a sort of multilateral arrangement between various regulators.
Yes. And I mean, it's one thing. I imagine, for example, South Africa and Zimbabwe probably have similar legal systems because of the colonial history there. But you've also got Francophone countries whose laws are looked at from a completely different perspective.
Yes.
And aligning those is quite difficult.
Yes, it's tough. I think what we will see most likely is that you'll get regional blocks that develop almost according to the sectors that you've just described. Mm-hmm. And then we will look to get connectivity between the regions. So, you know, SADC will connect to another region and ultimately to another continent. So it's called a hub and spoke model, where you create this hub of connectivity and then you connect to another hub of connectivity.
Okay. So it's interesting. Changes are happening in technology. Changes are happening in the regulatory landscape. But the technology is just accelerating at a fast pace.
Massively.
Now you've got CDBCs,
yes.
Got stable coins,
yes.
And cryptocurrencies. I mean, other forms of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin have been around for some time. What's your view on how these are then going to change how the payment landscape operates?
So all of those that you've mentioned are based on the blockchain, distributed ledger capability, but they all service quite different use cases in the market. So CBDCs, whether it's retail or wholesale, are very different in purpose to a stable coin, certainly different to a cryptocurrency, and equally to a tokenized deposit. So we see those as sort of five different classes of digital payment capabilities. Our focus, in the same way that we focus on connecting stores of value, fiat stores of value, we would like to do the same for things like stablecoins or tokenized deposits. And if you think about the problem case there, you have multiple issues of stablecoins. I mean, the biggest one globally at the moment is by Tether. Yeah. But in South Africa, we have the emergence of EZAR, MZAR, which are effectively stablecoins. And the question is, how does someone who has an investment in a stable coin then move that money to another stable coin in the same way that you might move from Bitcoin to another cryptocurrency. Yes. And our role ultimately will be to provide that connectivity tissue between different issuers, different providers of those capabilities, so that the money in inverted commas flows well. The other one was the CBDCs, and this is really interesting, particularly as we start working more closely and actively with the central bank, is that the central bank is in the process of reconsidering its settlement layer in the economy. And South Africa has got a very rich settlement layer. It's called a real-time gross settlement system under SAMOS. It's about 30 years old now and is due for a revamp, but it is been invested very heavily in over many years. And one of the considerations that many countries are going through at the moment as they refresh their settlement capabilities is it enabled for a wholesale or a retail central bank digital currency? So can we represent fiat on the blockchain and facilitate monetary policy and deposit capabilities into the market, but in a digital form as opposed to an electronic form?
Interesting. And that also speaks to the programmability of money.
Yes.
I mean, I've heard some interesting use cases about, for instance, a social grant on a blockchain would be different to distributing cash.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I guess the benefit of digital currencies is the smart contract element of it. You can build programmatic logic into it. I mean, let's take a simple use case. You know, you could give a digital currency to your child, but you could restrict that they only use that money in certain vendors for certain purchases. And in theory, in a CBDC, you could do the same. But I think this is where there's been, I would say, global concern around the control of personal use of currencies from the central issuer of those currencies. And so you might find that the restrictive element on programmable money in the central bank is low, whereas in something like a cryptocurrency, it could be higher because you're less concerned about the sovereignty of your personal decisions there.
I see. So there's a democratic freedom element to
that's exactly right. And I think that has globally, particularly as we go through let's call them geopolitical tensions globally, And we've seen almost a resurgence in cash, physical cash, in certain sectors, because it is seen as sort of an asset that you can store yourself. You're not dependent on a third party for it. And so you're right. And it's a different use case there for cash too.
Okay. Stephen, thank you very much for your time and for your insights.
Thank you, Nati. Nice to chat.
Great. That is Stephen Linnell. He is the CEO of PayInc.